Good afternoon. My name is Sasha Golob, and I'm the director of the Centre for Philosophy and the Visual Arts at King's College London.
I'm Ted Hunt. I'm a resident at Somerset House Studios, and I'm the lead artist on this project. I class myself as a speculative, a critical, and a discursive designer. So I look at reimagining futures, challenging existing presuppositions, and creating work which will lead to discussion, discourse, and conversation.
Hello, I'm Matthew Sotirio. I'm a philosopher at King's College London. I primarily work on the philosophy of mind, particularly working on nature of consciousness and temporal experience and representation, but also in philosophy of action and metaphysics.
We're going to be discussing this afternoon their recent project, The Sense of Time. Ted, I'd like to start by asking you to say a little about the project. I mean, it seems to me that we continually use watches to ask, what's the time? And what you've done is you've used watches to ask, rather, what is time? Does that seem right to you?
Yeah, it's a very interesting way of framing the project, and it's kind of a realization I've come to recently. Now it's kind of coming towards its end of having to explain it to people. So that very question, if you were to type that into Google, what is the time, it will give you a very exact answer to that, and it will be able to know where you are in the world and what the time is at that point in the world. So it will tell you it's now 3:16 p.m. Where you are. If you remove the word "the" from that search and you just ask what is time, then you're in a whole realm of confusion and paradoxes and a whole kind of spectrum of answers. So it's kind of, it's moving from what would be Newton's absolute time to Einstein's relative time. So as a start point for this project and working with Matt, it was kind of looking at the spectrum of time, the kind of the grey areas between the black and white and what would be the absolute time that we're so used to on watches. And that was kind of the core idea for the start of this project as a designer for me, is that we can then challenge the presumptions of when we look at time, how it is visualised and how it's measured and how it's designed, and then how we can start to play with that.
I mean, there's clearly different scientific notions of time. You mentioned the Newtonian, the Einsteinian, but we also have of everyday time. We have a time you might have in a business context, time you might have in a personal context. We divide our world up into different senses of time. And then, of course, there's kind of biological notions of time, yeah. Natural notions of time. What range of notions of time were you interested in the project?
When I first started the project, it was more following my intuition on what those could be. But then the more I got into conversations with Matt on this and looking at the research, we started to split them apart a bit more explicitly. So in the associated booklet with the project, which is also documented online, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different kind of ranges of those time, from a very kind of what would be called the physics of time, so kind of what a physicist would look at when they're talking about time and measuring time, to astronomical time, which is more the movement of the celestial bodies, and then coming down to biological time, so things like circadian rhythms and how our bodies have evolved into astrological and physical time. And then we start to get it more into the malleable aspects of time, which is where this kind of project takes off a bit more, is kind of what we can play with, what's plastic in this area. So psychological time, how we kind of perceive time and what's kind of coming from our brains. Sociological time, so kind of the intersubjective, and it used as kind of like a more of a coordination device between people. And then technological time, which is probably the most recent of those things, which kind of, when you look at those in context, if Homo sapiens have been around for 200 to 300,000 years, that we've only been mechanically measuring time maybe for 700 years, and we've only been under a kind of a universal notion of time that we all coordinate under for maybe a couple of hundred years. So it's a very kind of recent phenomenon compared to kind of how we biologically evolved into time. So that's kind of how I've been looking to split these things apart and then to draw some of those things out in these designs.
Fantastic. And perhaps before we go to the designs directly, Matt, could I ask you as a philosopher, so we've got these notions of malleability, more and less malleable, and people say things like, you know, as the accident happened, I felt time slow down. How should we think about that kind of thing? I mean, do they mean they felt their experience of time slow down, or they felt time itself slow down, or somewhere in between?
One of the things I'm interested in is trying to sort out how much of our experience of time is due to our own subjective perspective on the world, and how much is due to the nature of mind-independent reality itself. And within the subjective, which is to say within thinking about the nature of our temporal perspective, there's a whole bunch of things, some of which we don't have any control over, some of which are affected by things that happen within us, whether it's, I don't know, altered states of consciousness through taking drugs, or emotions that we experience, and others which are much more directly malleable and ones we can play with, critique, think of different ways of representing time. And the example of clocks and calendars features at the end, which is much more obviously optional, and so ones we can think about redesigning. But I suppose my interest as a philosopher is not just in working out what's due to our own subjective perspective as a way of getting at the nature of reality itself, but this kind of independent interest in the way in which that temporal perspective affects how we live our lives, plan our lives, what we value, and so on. So thinking about the different ways we can potentially represent time and how that can alter the way we think about time can also be relevant to how we choose to live our lives, what we value, and so on. And I was kind of thinking of a lot of what Ted was doing with these different ways of representing time on clock faces as a way of really testing those interdependencies between the representations of time that are optional and malleable and the practical dimension, how we live our lives, what we value, and so on.
And so at that point, perhaps if we turn directly to the watchers themselves, so these are temporal tools that represent, that chart, that play with, in a sense, the malleability of time and the ways we understand time. And Ted, perhaps you could start just by giving us a summary of what the watchers are, of what you produced, and then perhaps taking us through one of your favorite examples.
Of course, yes. So to describe them in audio, it's always a slight challenge when you're talking about something visual and you're only using your voice. But what we're looking at here in the studio, what the project will, when it's represented in its final showcase, is essentially 10 watch faces, and they're embedded into smartwatches, so it's digital watch faces, and each one of them is featuring a different design for time. So it's the classic circular clock or watch face, so that's consistent between them, and then how that is visualized differs for each. So to give a sense of, you mentioned one of my favorite ones, Sasha, so one of the first ones I actually did was this one, which is it just very simply kind of splits the watch face into day and night. So there's a black section which represents nighttime and a white section that represents daytime, and then two slivers between that, which are the twilight hours. But that is locally adjusted to London to show where we are at the point in the season that we are. So it's obviously winter now, so a lot of the day is dark. And then what is also happening on this one is that the it only does one cycle every 24 hours. So it's got one hand, which represents the hours and the minutes relatively. And that hand is black. So when the hand gets into the darkness of night, it will completely disappear. So this is kind of, it's quite a poetic statement in itself. And it's looking at the mystery of night compared to the clarity of day, and it's slightly critical on kind of this age we live in, where we're using so much technology and we're putting so much of our faith in kind of scientific endeavors, that we're looking for clarity in absolutely all things, that we're trying to provide kind of 24-hour daylight, and when we use smartphones, etc., we're shining, literally shining blue-white light associated with daylight into our retinas in the middle of the night, and we can't escape these loops. So kind of turning this into a design and then kind of having it around me since it's been developed, you get this kind of sense of the kind of organic nature of time as well, how it does flux and wane over days and seasons and months.
You can see the range of things going on there, right? So we've got this the questioning and the presentation simultaneously of a natural or a biological basis for time. And then also, I guess, these kind of related issues, the technological impact of how we understand time. And this interesting idea of a positive role for darkness or a positive role for that which isn't illuminated.
So as an artist myself, that I'm a big fan of mystery and kind of the unknown. And I kind of... that's where I find a lot of kind of room for maneuver in a way, as opposed to maybe someone from a scientific background. Not that I'm prejudiced against that. I read a lot of science. I'm kind of very kind of into the what science brings to us. But at the same time, that we've always lived between night and day and between known and unknown. I think that is, in some ways, is essential to the human condition, and that we have to appreciate the diversity between the both. So yeah, maybe that one, when you ask me for my favorite, is why I lead towards that, because that is, as Matt was talking about, kind of like time represents our values a lot. So some of my values as an artist of kind of working with mystery and the unknown are represented in a design like that.
Yeah, and it's a nice example again as well, because I suppose in a sense that's one of the timeless truths of human existence, this balance always between the light and the dark and the night and the day.
Mm.
And perhaps if I could ask you about one of the others, I mean, as a philosopher, I'm kind of biased. I mean, I love them all, but one that particularly jumped out at me was this one on the end, where you're engaging with issues of free will and determinism and choice. Perhaps you could say a little bit about that one, latency.
Yes, so that one is almost the provocation of the piece. It's the kind of the version of time that technology and society seems to be leading us towards, which is everything is accelerated, and we're always in this pursuit of acceleration, of productivity, of progress, of technological innovation. So this one, just to describe it for people that can't see it, is a standard clock with an hour, minute and a second hand, but it goes one stage further and it introduces the third hand. So if you think of the second, the reason it's called the second hand is it's the second division of an hour, that the minute is the first division of an hour, and then the second is the second division of an hour. So whereas a second will go around 360 degrees in 1 minute in 60 seconds, this third hand is going to go one full rotation in a single second, which is quite fast. When we're looking at it now, it feels like it's quite anxiety inducing. That, in a way, is almost to put in front of people this world that we're moving to now, with kind of constant updates in social media and everything being immediate and expecting results instantly. If we were to visualize that, it might look something like that. And then what's interesting is when you show people the series, that's the one that puts them off the most. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to have that on my wrist. It would just make me feel completely anxious all the time. But it was quite interesting when this was developed, and I showed this to Matt, and he was saying, well, imagine when the second hand was first introduced. Would people have had the same reaction to the second hand when it was first ticking along before, when they were just looking at minutes, or even a sundial was there, kind of how slowly a sundial might move through the day. And suddenly they see this thing which is tick, tick, like that could have been this same kind of vision of mechanical time having its kind of totalitarian grip on you.
I mean, it's interesting how in some ways we adapt, though. I mean, so as you say, people in a sense feel very pressurized when they see that now. But as Matt alludes to, you know, if you look at modernist literature, kind of 19th century, 20th century, there's this constant anxiety about things speeding up way back then. In a sense, of course, we're far beyond that. And we've adapted in our day-to-day lives to what they would have found unimaginably fast, unimaginably intense. And yet this watch represents that there's an even further stage that we're already kind of embracing, that we're already moving into. Mm. And whether, I don't know if you think we'll eventually become comfortable with that too, with that very great pace, or whether we're going to find the acceleration too much at some point.
Well, what it kind of says to me is maybe now we're at the boundaries of humanity, of what we can perceive in time, whereas algorithms, that would probably be slow for an algorithm just looking at that now, that they want to go to microseconds, and they've just introduced this in the financial trading systems, apparently kind of a new version of time. So maybe to me that's what it says. Yeah, it's kind of this, there's a boundary to human perception of time, which we probably couldn't go much further than this. Matt was explaining this quite well when you wave your hand. What was the analogy that you use for kind of like how we perceive when we're moving our hands?
Yeah, so this came out of a conversation about reasons why we may have ended up with a certain kind of way of representing time as optimal for interpersonal coordination. So we've got with a clock face we're familiar with, kind of ways of measuring time that aren't too quick for our finite capacities to perceive. And there's a respect in which anything faster would be inappropriate for us given the way we experience time. Anything much slower might not be useful for coordinating our lives over minutes and hours as opposed to days and years. So once we're at a point where we want to coordinate our agency over time with each other within the interval of a day, then it looks like we want ways of dividing up time that are going to be useful for that, but not outstrip our capacities to experience certain kinds of change. But I think one of the things that playing with the design of watch faces does for us is that it helps to bring out what is conventional in our ways of thinking of time, but also what's perspectival, and that's easily missed. Actually, one of the others that's one of my favorites is one of the most simple, which is the clock face that moves at different rates, andante, allegro, largo, and so on, because it does without the numerical representation of time. But it also helps kind of undermine the idea that there is such a thing as the rate of at which time passes. That depends on your experience of time, whether it's passing in a way that's urgent and rushed or not. So there's a way in which the depiction of the slower movement of time can make one feel that time isn't passing at such a fast, urgent rate. So it's a nice contrast piece with a latency, where there's one's given the impression that this time is flowing on at a pace and one has to keep up. Whereas, of course, it's not flowing at any rate at which one has to keep up. And the way we experience time, the way we exercise our agency over time is really up to us.
And perhaps I could ask both of you that. I mean, there's a philosophical issue that's underlying a lot of what you both said, which I guess is the time-space relationship. So a lot of modern philosophy is worried about which of these is prior, if either, if you could have a temporal awareness without a spatial awareness, if the converse might be possible, we might have some kind of spatial awareness without a temporal one. And obviously, here, in a sense, you have that relationship writ large. I mean, as Matt says, we're seeing time through motion. Has this project changed in any way how you think about that underlying relationship between time and space? Or do you think there's anything useful to say about their interrelation, or maybe the priority of one over the other?
Part of the interest of this project was the fact that they started off just as animations, so they weren't functioning devices at that stage, and then they got sent off to be made into working prototypes, which then it turns them into something slightly different, and they become more than just a depiction of time. If you think of kind of Dali's melting clock face, that's a visual depiction of kind of the plasticity of time or how surrealism might affect our perception of time. But once these faces became working prototypes, there was they were alive in a way. So the anecdote I was going to give for the celestial version of time, so it's four concentric rings, circles, and each one has got a white spot on it. The inner circle represents the rotation of the Earth on its axis, so that's split into 24 points. So where the white dot is would be essentially what hour of the day is. The second ring is the day of the month, so it's around 28 to 31 points on it, and that would represent the day of the month and the moon's orbit of the Earth. The third one then is a year, so the month of the year that we're in, divided into 12, so then that's the Earth's orbit of the Sun. And then the final one, to give perspective, is the Sun is also on its own orbit of the galaxy, but because that is such a huge orbit, I think it's 255 million years to do its orbit. The depiction on this face would, if you'd own it for a lifetime, and you wouldn't notice that move. But the anecdote I was going to give, so when that actually went off to be developed, it came back because it was being developed in India. I got an email about midnight and I installed it on the face, and the inner circle was nearly at the top, and I was like, amazing, it works, and the month was in the right position, XYZ. I got up the next morning and turned it on, and I was like, oh, it's broken already, because the inner circle representing the hour seemed to be far too forward in the day than it actually should be, because it was 8 in the morning, and to me that was the start of the day. But then when you think of the day, it's 24 hours, you divide that into three, there's kind of 8 points of three. So it was, when I wake up at the start of my day, I'm already a third into 24 hours. So kind of that idea of spatial relativity, it started to play with me. And it was only actually when I looked at it as a working model that it started to make those judgments. And the same with a lot of the other designs that now that I've had them made, I'll just have them on my desk while I'm working. And they will start to introduce kind of these new kind of re-questioning of assumptions about time.
So it's very much shaping your own experience of time. It's not that you sort of had set ideas that you wanted to produce through these items.
And that was me working on them for weeks and weeks, if not months and months, and knowing the designs intimately. And even then, when they were installed, they still had the ability to shock me.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose that's such a beautiful thing about doing it with watches. You know, they have this intimacy that you continually catch sight of them, and yet they're able to then say something to you very profound about the way you structure your life, the way you understand, you know, what time it is. I mean, Matt, how do you see this space-time relation issue?
Because time is so elusive, we're naturally drawn to kind of spatialize time and explain it in either spatial metaphors or provide spatial depictions of time. It's very difficult to know how else to think and talk about time. What the watch faces do, though, is show that among the spatial metaphors and spatial ways of depicting, there are many and various, and so they're all kind of optional. So Ted's example of seeing that you're third of the way through the day by a kind of spatial, visual spatial cue brings out that that's just one of many ways of carving up the day. One might think, one's always drawn to try and have contact with time in a pure way that isn't spatial. And one way in which philosophers are trying to think of that, the examples they often give are sounds, right? So you try and get away from the spatial metaphors by thinking about sounds. And even silences between sounds, right? That's the purest way of thinking about our conscious contact with time, the silence between sounds, it's that pause. Purest sense of the passage of time. But of course, that's all driven by change of another sort, which we aren't perceiving, which is the clock of consciousness, the inner clock that we have ticking on. And there are very many inner biological clocks which amount to changes within our bodies and brains that are ways of both measuring duration, but giving us a sense of how long periods of time have endured, as well as sorting out for us the order of events we experience, what came first, then second, then third, and so on. I think that because there's so little agreement about what time itself is, and whether or not once we strip away what we bring to our experience of time, past, future, the passage of time, and so on, we're the ones left with anything that really amounts to something recognizably temporal at all.
Right, right. So time would be the sort of lenses through which we're looking at things rather than a property of the things themselves. And so in some sense, it would be a little bit like certain modern views of colour, you know, the idea that things in themselves aren't really red or blue. That's a way they strike creatures like us. Time might be just the same.
Yeah, that's one thought. And of course, there's views on which colours are only accessible to subjects who have our kind of perspective on reality, but that doesn't make them any the less real or there.
Right.
And there can be a similar view with respect to time. Once you strip away all that we bring to our experience of time, nothing much is left that's recognizably temporal, but that doesn't mean time itself is unreal. It's right, only accessible to creatures with our perspectives.
So we focused obviously on how each of you see this project, but of course in a sense it's not just about you two, because a constitutive feature of it has been presenting these devices at these workshop events and talking through with audiences their perception of time and getting them to kind of react to the devices, I guess in some sense as a provocation, in some sense as a check on how unreflective we can be about these issues. And could you say a little bit about how those workshops have gone and how the audiences have responded?
Kind of beyond my expectations in a lot of ways. When I started the project, I was very worried about the depth of time to talk about and how much has already been said about it, like all of the different fields that it touches upon. But from the first workshop I've done on this, just showing my work as the initial provocation, which is always what this, myself as a designer, has tried to attempt to do via this work, is that I class myself as a discursive designer. So I'm not designing in order to create a product or an object that might become the new Swatch or the new Rolex. It's to create these as designs which then people look at and then they reinterpret and they re-question how they might value time and what they might project onto these designs.
I mean, I guess the final thing I'd like to raise is I guess about the nature of the project and about your collaboration. I mean, it's so interesting that you've had an artist and a philosopher working so closely together, bringing their different perspectives on it. And perhaps if you could just each maybe say briefly about how you found that process and reacting to each other. And perhaps, Matt, if we go first with you.
Having a kind of making concrete, a kind of design question centered around a temporal tool. So a tool that you use to structure the way that you organize your life, it kind of makes very, very, it kind of crystallizes all those interdependencies between ways of representing time, what you value, how you choose to occupy time. So thinking in terms of a design challenge, it was a really interesting way of thinking about those abstract issues, about the relations between temporal representation, value, and our agency.
And Ted, from your perspective?
So I suppose it was more around the dialogue and the discussion. So essentially, us working on the project was a series of conversations over coffee. So we'd meet every 3 or 4 weeks. And I'd bring up kind of what I'd been reading recently or some of the designs that I'd been working on and show those to Matt. And then we'd talk over those. We didn't go with a set agenda to each conversation. It was very meandering. It started off quite broad. We were talking about block universes and all sorts of the essence of the ways that we could look at this. And then it started to come in and be more focused. But maybe a point of the breakthrough where the value kind of was added to me working with Matt on this project as opposed to just doing it on my own is when we came up with this notion of these designs reflecting values. And I remember when that was written in a sentence, it was quite a short sentence, and then we based the seminar that we worked with some of the students from King's on that, and then that kind of moved forward and then became the basis of the workshops, as I say, that everyone's got their own kind of different value of time. And if you ask people about that, that becomes then such a rich conversation. And we all exist in time. We've all got lived experience of it. So when originally writing the proposition for this commission, it was asked, who is the audience? And the audience is essentially everyone, because everyone lives in time. Yeah. And everyone has experience of time. So that, to me, as a kind of a subject to deal with as an artist, as a designer, yeah, is it's so rich, and then it's got such kind of longevity to it now as well, which, talking about time and temporality, that a lot of projects I work on might come to a very solid conclusion. But this, I see, and it already has this, a few different interpretations of it planned for 2019, but it's almost getting towards it, then it could become more of a life's work, or it's at least a decade's worth of work. There's so many different ways, different angles that I could extend this, look at it, reinterpret it.